But in Gondor in after days, it long was said that the elven boat rode the falls and the foaming pool, and bore him down through Osgiliath, and past the many mouths of Anduin, out into the great sea at night under the stars. For a while the three companions remained silent, gazing after him. Then Aragorn spoke. "They will look for him from the White Tower," he said, "but he will not return from mountain or from sea." Then slowly he began to sing.
"Through Rohan, over fen and field, where the long grass grows, the west wind comes walking, and about the walls it goes. What news from the west, O wandering wind, do you bring to me tonight? Have you seen Boromir the Tall, by moon or by starlight? I saw him ride over seven streams, over waters wide and grey. I saw him walk in empty lands until he passed away. Into the shadows of the north, I saw him then no more. The north wind may have heard the horn of the son of Denethor. O Boromir, from the high walls, westward I look afar, but you came not from the empty lands where no men are."
Then Legolas sang,
"From the mouths of the sea the south wind flies, from the sand hills and the stones. The wailing of the gulls it bears, and at the gate it moans. What news from the south, O sighing wind, do you bring to me at eve? Where now is Boromir the fair? He tarries and I grieve. Ask not of me where he doth dwell, so many bones there lie. On the white shores and the dark shores, under the stormy sky. So many have passed down Anduin to find the flowing sea. Ask of the north wind news of them, the north wind sends to me. O Boromir, beyond the gate, the seaward road runs south, but you came not with the wailing gulls from the grey sea's mouth."
Then Aragorn sang again.
"From the gate of kings the north wind rides, and past the roaring falls, and clear and cold about the tower its loud horn calls. What news from the north, O mighty wind, do you bring to me today? What news of Boromir the bold, for he is long away? Beneath Amon Hen I heard his cry, there many foes he fought. His cloven shield, his broken sword, they to the water brought. His head so proud, his face so fair, his limbs they laid to rest. And Rauros, golden Rauros falls, bore him upon its breast. O Boromir, the Tower of God, shall ever northward gaze, to Rauros, golden Rauros falls, until the end of days."
So they ended. Then they turned their boat and drove it with all the speed they could against the stream, back to Parthgarlan.
"You left the east wind to me," said Gimli, "but I will say naught of it."
"That is as it should be," said Aragorn. "In Minas Tirith they endure the east wind, but they do not ask it for tidings.
But now Boromir has taken his road, and we must make haste to choose our own." He surveyed the green lawn, quickly but thoroughly, stooping often to the earth. "No orcs have been on this ground," he said. "Otherwise nothing can be made out for certain. All our footprints are here, crossing and recrossing. I cannot tell whether any of the hobbits have come back since the search for Frodo began." He returned to the bank, close to where the rill from the spring trickled out into the river. "There are some clear prints here," he said. "A hobbit waded out into the water and back, but I cannot say how long ago."
"How then do you read this riddle?"
asked Gimli. Aragorn did not answer at once, but went back to the camping place and looked at the baggage. "Two packs are missing," he said, "and one is certainly Sam's. It was rather large and heavy. This, then, is the answer. Frodo has gone by boat, and his servant has gone with him. Frodo must have returned while we were all away. I met Sam going up the hill and told him to follow me, but plainly he didn't do so. He guessed his master's mind, and came back here before Frodo had gone. He didn't find it easy to leave Sam behind."
"But why should he leave us behind, and without a word?" said Gimli. "That was a strange deed."
"And a brave deed," said Aragorn. "Sam was right, I think. Frodo didn't wish to lead any friend to death with him in Mordor, but he knew that he must go himself. Something happened after he left us that overcame his fear and doubt."
"Maybe hunting orcs came on him and he fled," said Legolas.
"He fled, certainly," said Aragorn, "but not, I think, from orcs."
What he thought was the cause of Frodo's sudden resolve and flight, Aragorn did not say. The last words of Boromir he long kept secret.
"Well, so much at least is now clear," said Legolas. "Frodo is no longer on this side of the river. Only he can have taken the boat. And Sam is with him. Only he would have taken his pack."
"Our choice, then," said Gimli, "is either to take the remaining boat and follow Frodo, or else to follow the orcs on foot. There is little hope either way. We have already lost precious hours."
"Let me think," said Aragorn. "And now may I make a right choice, and change the evil fate of this unhappy day." He stood silent for a moment.
"I will follow the orcs," he said at last. "I would have guided Frodo to Mordor and gone with him to the end, but if I seek him now in the wilderness, I must abandon the captives to torment and death. My heart speaks clearly at last. The fate of the bearer is in my hands no longer. The company has played its part. Yet we that remain cannot forsake our companions while we have strength left. Come, we will go now. Leave all that can be spared behind. We will press on by day and dark." They drew up the last boat and carried it to the trees. They laid beneath it such of their goods as they did not need and could not carry away. Then they left Parthgarlan. The afternoon was fading as they came back to the glade where Boromir had fallen. There they picked up the trail of the orcs. It needed little skill to find.
"No other folk make such a trampling," said Legolas. "It seems their delight to slash and beat down growing things that are not even in their way."
"But they go with a great speed for all that," said Aragorn, "and they do not tire. And later we may have to search for our path in bare, hard lands." "Well, after them," said Gimli. "Dwarves, too, can go swiftly, and they do not tire sooner than orcs. But it will be a long chase. They have a long start."
"Yes," said Aragorn. "We shall all need the endurance of dwarves. But come, with hope or without hope, we will follow the trail of our enemies. And woe to them if we prove the swifter. We will make such a chase as shall be accounted a marvel among the three kindreds, elves, dwarves, and men. Forth the three hunters!" Like a deer he sprang away. Through the trees he sped. On and on he led them, tireless and swift,
now that his mind was at last made up. The woods about the lake they left behind, long slopes they climbed, dark, hard-edged against the sky, already red with sunset. Dusk came. They passed away, grey shadows in a stony land. Chapter 2. The Riders of Rohan. Dusk deepened. Mist lay behind them among the trees below, and brooded on the pale margins of the Anduin, but the sky was clear. Stars came out. The waxing moon was riding in the west, and the shadows of the rocks were black. They had come to the feet of stony hills, and their pace was slower, for the trail was no longer easy to follow. Here the highlands of the Emin Muil ran from north to south in two long, tumbled ridges. The western side of each ridge was steep and difficult, but the eastward slopes were gentler, furrowed with many gullies and narrow ravines. All night the three companions scrambled in this bony land, climbing to the crest of the first and tallest ridge, and down again into the darkness of a deep, winding valley on the other side. There in the still, cool hour before dawn they rested for a brief space. The moon had long gone down before them. The stars glittered above them. The first light of day had not yet come over the dark hills behind. For the moment Aragorn was at a loss. The orc trail had descended into the valley, but there it had vanished. "Which way would they turn, do you think?" said Legolas. "Northward to take a straighter road to Isengard, or Fangorn, if that is their aim, as you guess, or southward to strike the Entwash?"
"They will not make for the river, whatever mark they aim at," said Aragorn.
"And unless there is much amiss in Rohan, and the power of Saruman is greatly increased, they will take the shortest way that they can find over the fields of the Rohirrim. Let us search northwards." The dale ran like a stony trough between the ridged hills, and a trickling stream flowed among the boulders at the bottom. A cliff frowned upon their right. To their left rose grey slopes, dim and shadowy in the late night. They went on for a mile or more northwards. Aragorn was searching, bent towards the ground, among the folds and gullies leading up into the western ridge. Legolas was some way ahead. Suddenly the elf gave a cry, and the others came running towards him. "We have already overtaken some of those that we are hunting," he said. "Look," he pointed. And they saw that what they had at first taken to be boulders lying at the foot of the slope were huddled bodies. 5 dead orcs lay there. They had been hewn with many cruel strokes, and 2 had been beheaded. The ground was wet with their dark blood.
"Here is another riddle," said Gimli. "But it needs the light of day, and for that we cannot wait."
"Yet, however you read it, it seems not unhopeful," said Legolas. "Enemies of the orcs are likely to be our friends. Do any folk dwell in these hills?"
"No," said Aragorn. "The Rohirrim seldom come here, and it is far from Minas Tirith. It might be that some company of men were hunting here for reasons that we do not know, yet I think not."
"What do you think?" said Gimli.
"I think that the enemy brought his own enemy with him," answered Aragorn. "These are northern orcs from far away. Among the slain are none of the great orcs with the strange badges. There was a quarrel, I guess. It is no uncommon thing with these foul folk. Maybe there was some dispute about the road."
"Or about the captives," said Gimli. "Let us hope that they, too, did not meet their end here."
Aragorn searched the ground in a wide circle, but no other traces of the fight could be found. They went on. Already the eastward sky was turning pale, the stars were fading, and a grey light was slowly growing. A little further north, they came to a fold in which a tiny stream, falling and winding, had cut a stony path down into the valley. In it some bushes grew, and there were patches of grass upon its sides.
"At last," said Aragorn, "here are the tracks that we seek. Up this water channel, this is the way that the orcs went after their debate."
Swiftly now the pursuers turned and followed the new path. As if fresh from a night's rest, they sprang from stone to stone. At last they reached the crest of the grey hill, and a sudden breeze blew in their hair and stirred their cloaks, the chill wind of dawn. Turning back, they saw, across the river, the far hills kindled. Day leaped into the sky. The red rim of the sun rose over the shoulders of the dark land. Before them in the west, the world lay still, formless and grey. But even as they looked, the shadows of night melted. The colours of the waking earth returned. Green flowed over the wide meads of Rohan. The white mist shimmered in the water vales. And far off to the left, 30 leagues or more, blue and purple stood the white mountains, rising into peaks of jet, tipped with glimmering snows, flushed with the rose of morning.
"Gondor! Gondor!"
cried Aragorn. "Would that I looked on you again in happier hour. Not yet does my road lie southward to your bright streams.
Gondor, Gondor, between the mountains and the sea, west wind blew there, the light upon the silver tree fell like bright rain in gardens of the kings of old. O proud walls, white towers, O winged crown and throne of gold, O Gondor, Gondor, shall men behold the silver tree, or west wind blow again between the mountains and the sea? Now let us go," he said, drawing his eyes away from the south, and looking out west and north to the way that he must tread. The ridge upon which the companions stood went down steeply before their feet. Below it, 20 fathoms or more, there was a wide and rugged shelf which ended suddenly in the brink of a sheer cliff, the east walls of Rohan. So ended the Emin Weal, and the green plains of the Rohirrim stretched away before them to the edge of sight.
"Look!"
cried Legolas, pointing up into the pale sky above them. "There is the eagle again. He is very high. He seems to be flying now away, from this land back to the north. He is going with great speed. Look!"
"No, not even my eyes can see him, my good Legolas," said Aragorn. "He must be far aloft indeed. I wonder what is his errand, and if he is the same bird that I have seen before. But look, I can see something nearer at hand and more urgent. There is something moving over the plain."
"Many things," said Legolas. "It is a great company on foot, but I cannot say more, nor see what kind of folk they may be. They are many leagues away, 12, I guess, but the flatness of the plain is hard to measure."
"I think, none the less, that we no longer need any trail to tell us which way to go," said Gimli. "Let us find a path down to the fields as quick as may be."
"I doubt if you will find a path quicker than the one that the orcs chose," said Aragorn. They followed their enemies now by the clear light of day. It seemed that the orcs had pressed on with all possible speed. Every now and again the pursuers found things that had been dropped or cast away. Food bags, the rinds and crusts of hard grey bread, a torn black cloak, a heavy iron-nailed shoe broken on the stones. The trail led them north along the top of the escarpment, and at length they came to a deep cleft, carved in the rock by a stream that splashed noisily down. In the narrow ravine, a rough path descended like a steep stair into the plain. At the bottom they came with a strange suddenness on the grass of Rohan. It swelled like a green sea up to the very foot of the Emin Weal. The falling stream vanished into a deep growth of cresses and water plants, and they could hear it tinkling away in green tunnels, down long, gentle slopes towards the fens of Entwash Vale far away. They seemed to have left winter clinging to the hills behind.
Here the air was softer and warmer, and faintly scented, as if spring was already stirring, and the sap was flowing again in herb and leaf. Legolas took a deep breath, like one that drinks a great draught after long thirst in barren places. "Ah, the green smell!" he said. "It is better than much sleep. Let us run!"
"Light feet may run swiftly here," said Aragorn. "More swiftly, maybe, than iron-shod orcs. Now we have a chance to lessen their lead."
They went in single file, running like hounds on a strong scent, and an eager light was in their eyes. Nearly due west, the broad swath of the marching orcs tramped its ugly slot. The sweet grass of Rohan had been bruised and blackened as they passed. Presently Aragorn gave a cry and turned aside.
"Stay!" he shouted. "Do not follow me yet."
He ran quickly to the right, away from the main trail, for he had seen footprints that went that way, branching off from the others, the marks of small, unshod feet. These, however, did not go far before they were crossed by orc prints, also coming out from the main trail behind and in front, and then they curved sharply back again and were lost in the tramping. At the furthest point, Aragorn stooped and picked up something from the grass. Then he ran back.
"Yes," he said. "They are quite plain. A hobbit's footprints. Pippin's, I think. He is smaller than the other. And look at this." He held up a thing that glittered in the sunlight.
It looked like the new opened leaf of a beech tree, fair and strange in that treeless plain.
"The brooch of an elven cloak," cried Legolas and Gimli together.
"Not idly do the leaves of Lorien fall," said Aragorn. "This did not drop by chance. It was cast away as a token to any that might follow. I think Pippin ran away from the trail for that purpose." "Then he at least was alive," said Gimli. "And he had the use of his wits, and of his legs too. This is heartening. We do not pursue in vain."
"Let us hope that he did not pay too dearly for his boldness," said Legolas. "Come, let us go on. The thought of those merry young folk driven like cattle burns my heart." The sun climbed to the noon, and then rode slowly down the sky. Light clouds came up out of the sea in the distant south, and were blown away upon the breeze. The sun sank. Shadows rose behind, and reached out long arms from the east. Still the hunters held on. One day now had passed since Boromir fell, and the orcs were yet far ahead. No longer could any sight of them be seen in the level plains. As nightshade was closing about them, Aragorn halted. Only twice in the day's march had they rested for a brief while, and 12 leagues now lay between them and the eastern wall where they had stood at dawn.
"We have come at last to a hard choice," he said. "Shall we rest by night, or shall we go on while our will and strength hold?"
"Unless our enemies rest also, they will leave us far behind if we stay to sleep," said Legolas.
"Surely even orcs must pause on the march," said Gimli.
"Seldom will orcs journey in the open under the sun, yet these have done so," said Legolas. "Certainly they will not rest by night."
"But if we walk by night, we cannot follow their trail," said Gimli.
"The trail is straight, and turns neither right nor left as far as my eyes can see," said Legolas.
"Maybe I could lead you at guess in the darkness, and hold to the line," said Aragorn. "But if we strayed, or they turned aside, then when light came, there might be a long delay before the trail was found again."
"And there is this also," said Gimli. "Only by day can we see if any tracks lead away. If a prisoner should escape, or if one should be carried off, eastward, say, to the great river, toward Mordor, we might pass the signs and never know it."
"That is true," said Aragorn. "But if I read the signs back yonder rightly, the orcs of the White Hand prevailed, and the whole company is now bound for Isengard. Their present course bears me out."
"Yet it would be rash to be sure of their counsels," said Gimli. "And what of escape?
In the dark we should have passed the signs that led you to the brooch.
The orcs will be doubly on their guard since then, and the prisoners even wearier, said Legolas. There will be no escape again if we do not contrive it. How that is to be done cannot be guessed, but first we must overtake them.
And yet even I, dwarf of many journeys, and not the least hardy of my folk, cannot run all the way to Isengard without any pause, said Gimli. My heart burned me too, and I would have started sooner, but now I must rest a little to run the better, and if we rest, then the blind knight is the time to do so.
I said that it was a hard choice, said Aragorn. How shall we end this debate?
You are our guide, said Gimli, and you are skilled in the chase. You shall choose.